This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time. Turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
When it comes to hiring, don't search for a great talent. Match with them. Thanks to Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find qualified candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility. Go to Indeed.com/listen and tell them you heard about them from this podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
How are you? Welcome in. It's WEEI Afternoons. Christian Arkin, Andy Hart, nice to have you with us here today. We got Dan Ball and Stiz behind the glass, taking your phone calls, getting you up to speed on what's trending as well. We've got phone lines open all day long at 617-779-7937. And we played that quote from Robert Kraft to open the show because I wanted to start the show off talking about the Krafts. Talking about Robert Kraft, Jonathan Kraft, Statler and Waldorf, if you will, up there in their at the opera.
Hey, that was me. That was me and Paul Perillo back in the day during halftime of preseason games.
There you go. You've been replaced, though, by the owners of the team.
By much richer people.
And I think that whatever you want to say about that game, we all agree, and we'll get to what Mike Reese had to say because he was harsh today.
He's not happy.
No, he is not.
He's an angry elf.
And I wonder, he has a pretty open line of communication with Statler and Waldorf over there, so we'll see. We'll see if there's a reaction to the things that he had to say today, as it was, for him, scorching. I mean, really, scorching commentary on the state of the New England Patriots. But I think that despite all the mishaps on the field, all the penalties, Kayshon Booty flipping the ball to the other team, going for it on 3rd-and-1, 4th-and-1, all the bad stuff that we saw on the field, even all the stuff that we heard from Gerard Mayo after the game, and then subsequently the next morning on the Greg Hill Show, what stood out the most and what left the biggest impression, I think, on people around here and certainly in this room and in this building was that brief, quick clip of the Krafts talking to each other, and you couldn't see, or you couldn't, I don't know, translate everything. But anybody, even an amateur lip reader, could tell you, he said the play calling has been terrible. And he had a big notepad. He was scribbling notes about the play call. I would only imagine, right? What else are you, what are you write, taking notes about if that's what you're turning to your father and saying, well, the play calling has been terrible. Right. Scribble, scribble, scribble. So now we have the Krafts up in the owner's booth in the away stadium, by the way. It's not even like they were at home. And they're part of this now. They're part of the national narrative. They're part of the broadcast. They get, and I know that this is something that's been going on since however long. I mean, we remember Robert with the big puffy coat in Germany last year, and we remember wherever that was, and we remember various times where they cut to him. But now it's the second straight year of right in the lottery of the draft. It's another, I'd say, start to a rebuild, even though you're 5 years removed from Tom Brady being here. And they're getting involved. And I wonder, how involved are they going to get? Are they going to get in the weeds on play calling? Are Robert and Jonathan Kraft going to start calling either Mayo? We know that they do the debriefings with Mayo. Yeah. I don't know if they talk to Alex Van Pelt. I don't know exactly how it goes with the chain of command is or the lines of communication. You may have some more insight on that, Andy, but I don't know. But I wonder, if this is where they're at, if they're up there jotting down notes about the play calling and discussing the play calling in the owner's box, knowing that they're going to be on TV, right? They know they're going to get the cameras put on them. Maybe they don't know exactly when it's going to happen, but they're aware that there's cameras pointing at them,
yep.
Especially as the season slips away. And believe me, you're going to see a lot of them in these two Buffalo games and the Chargers game. I think you're going to see the Crafts more often than not just because of what you saw here.
We'll see.
These cameras want to pick up a clip of him maybe saying, talking smack about the coaching or the play calling or anything. You know, I mean, that's now you got something there. That's a big clip. That's a clip that's been talked about for 48 straight hours, and I don't see it ending anytime soon. We'll certainly talk with Russ Tucker about it as he was part of that broadcast. This is the lowest cash spending team in the league again. Dan Ball had a graphic that we saw, and we'll get to that as well. But let's go ahead and start with that clip. We did talk about it yesterday, but I want to really focus on it because I think that this is indicative of where the organization is right now. Ownership and their desire to take the team back from Bill Belichick. Is that what this means now? They want to be involved in the nitty-gritty of play calling and things of that nature. I know that they hire the coaches and do all that other stuff, but I wonder, Mike Reese said there needs to be soul searching at every level of the organization. How much soul searching are they going to do, and how deep is it going to go?
That's the most important level of soul searching, I believe,
yeah.
From that quote we just heard. Excuse me. He ended with a little, I hope we don't struggle.
Right.
But the beginning part of it was, we might struggle. It felt like he wanted to go into this eyes wide open, but then at some point got emotional and reactionary. And we've heard, hell, Robert tells us he's a fan from
yep.
the metal bleachers at Foxborough Stadium days.
Mm-hmm.
And Gerard Mayo, when he talks about these debriefs, has said they are fans. They are fans of this team first. They have similar to reactions. He said it, I think, to how the Greg Hill show reacts on a Monday. They're reacting to plays and calls and decisions and highs and lows and anger and emotion. So we knew all that. So I actually don't have the biggest problem with the play calling sucks or whatever is mm-hmm. terrible, because I think fans are saying that. We've said that.
Right.
To me, the biggest issue was the pen and notebook, because that's like you're prepping for something.
Right.
You're getting detailed information ready to be a very active, intimate participant.
Or for some sort of presentation
yes.
that you're about to make, right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And if I'm going to take Gerard at his words when he tells me the Crafts are fans, I want to take him at his word when he tells me they stay out of football. But that notebook and pen mm-hmm. in Jonathan's lap, looking at the game, as you said, he wasn't calculating concession sales in Arizona to compare them to Gillette. He was watching the game and taking notes, just like I do. For a freaking post-game show, because
mm-hmm.
I host a post-game show. So I got to be ready with details. And when I say, oh, that play, I can flip back. Why is he doing it? He's the owner. He should be sitting there drinking a beer, a wine, a beverage of some sort, and either enjoying the product or lamenting it.
Mm-hmm.
But notes? Is it a deposition? Are you preparing for trial? What do they call it when you're, like, getting all the evidence? Evidentiary period?
That's called discovery.
Discovery?
Yeah, right.
Is this
yeah.
the discovery phase
mm-hmm.
of whatever the hell you're going to do?
Mm-hmm.
And we've heard rumblings, like meetings are going on behind the scenes, high-level meetings. What does that mean?
Yesterday, Robin, there was a whole shift with because they got
schedule?
In late. Right, yeah, they've never gotten late before.
And Robin's involved, Jonathan's, like, if they want to tell us they're staying out of it, then don't look like you're freaking elbows deep in it. Because now it looks like you're elbows deep in it to the point where I said to you, I thought they couldn't fire Alex Van Pelt because it looks like Jonathan is having a hissy fit and fired Alex Van Pelt. And
right.
it's a bad look for him in the organization.
Well, is it? Is that? I mean, I think that would be unpopular, but I don't know how wide ranging that would be. I'd consider it unpopular. You would, too. I think hardcore fans who have been watching this
team. Oh,
it's
a bad look.
It's a bad look, sure. But
that's
I think
some
that
Daniel Snyder-ish right there.
Yeah. That's Daniel Snyder bad. I don't know if it's Daniel Snyder bad.
Yeah.
Come on.
That
Daniel
is,
Snyder would be, I don't know.
He's got a notebook. He says the play calling's horrible, and he tells us he stays out of football, and the next day that Alex Van Pelt is fired? That's a bad look for me. And you also brought up, will they get involved?
Offense is 31st in the league. I mean, it's okay. not, you know.
So you think they should fire Alex Van Pelt?
No, but I'm saying okay. if I was going to make a case for it, that'd be the headline.
Okay, and if I were going to make a case for keeping anyone, it would be easiest for Alex Van Pelt. He's done the best. Hell, on our show yesterday, Drake May tried to do his best. That clip made the rounds everywhere of him defending Alex Van Pelt. But you said something earlier. Do they get involved with play calling?
Right.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing if they do get involved with play calling?
I think that is a terrible thing.
In one sense, it is. It's Daniel Snyder-ish again.
I think in every sense it is. What the hell do they know about play calling?
as much as we do, and we've asked for more creative play calling, aggressive play calling, different style. They have the ability to do it. Would you do it?
Would I what? Would I intervene and say I want to call the plays
now? I mean, you said it on the radio. You texted me during the game the other day. So much for those hopes of more creative play calling or more aggressive play calling. So you want it.
I do want it.
If you were in the owner's box, you could ask for it.
Okay, but also Gerard Mayo and other people have said, yeah, you know, we're going to be taking more chances down the stretch here. That's
the only person I saw do that was Drake May. And it seemed like he went off the script
and
was just like, I'm chucking it to Buda Baker. I'm going to have to out-throw Buda Baker, but I'm throwing it down the field here.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like that was him just kind of deciding, I need to do this at some point. Not that Alex Van Pelt had did anything more aggressive or whatever.
We do a talk show.
Yes.
All right?
A very good one. Very popular.
Best in the city, I think. But
host two.
That is correct.
Get on the train now while you still can.
That's right. Well, there's still room. The difference between what we do and what the Crafts have the power to influence is very different. I mean, there's a difference between discussing something and wanting something and ownership saying, you know what, this person that we hired here to do this job, we're going to insist they do it a different way, in a way that maybe they're not comfortable with because that's what we want.
So the ends don't justify the means.
I don't think they do.
Because we all want more aggressive play calling.
Right.
We all want more creative play. For example, let me give you an example. This is a hypothetical. I want everybody to know that.
Okay.
If the Crafts influenced the decision to not trade the number three pick, if the Crafts said, I want Drake May, don't trade the pick. Don't take Marvin Harrison.
Okay.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing in hindsight?
Well, in hindsight, you could argue it was a good thing, although I do have some numbers on that I'd like to get to as well.
Are you jumping ship on May?
Not necessarily, but I am watching some of these other teams. I'm watching some of these other teams who are going to be picking quarterbacks in the draft this year who already have a decent little offense built up for them that Drake May doesn't have, and they're not going to waste a year of their rookie quarterback's rookie deal. So we'll get into that later. But in terms of that to me is different from getting in the weeds on the play calling, because that's going to be an ambassador for your organization for the next however many years that you're maybe going to pay $50 million a year to if they're good in their rookie deal and you extend them. And, you know, it's a big financial commitment. That's different from saying, hey, me, an owner who doesn't really have any specialty in play calling, wants to tinker with how you're doing your job and calling plays, because that's two very different things. At the very least, ownership can say, hey, this is going to be one of my employees, maybe our most prominent employee. I want to make sure that it's someone I like and that I approve of and whatever. And I think that there's a difference between that and getting involved in play calling.
What if he goes through the proper channels? And when I say getting involved with play calling, I don't mean specific plays or anything like that. I'm talking about what we actually want Gerard Mayo to do. Just intercede and say, be more aggressive. Throw the ball down the field a little bit more here. Target whatever. Like, sort of vagaries under which Alex Van Pelt can work. What if Robert just goes to Mayo? Simple debrief with Mayo.
Mm-hmm.
We want more aggressive play calling. And then Mayo goes to AVP and says, listen, we need to be a little bit more aggressive offensively, play calling. Is that okay?
I guess.
Yeah, because I'm kind of okay with that. I don't really think that's meddlesome. I really don't think that's...
But that's different from sitting there taking notes all day, right? I mean, they're up there taking notes about the play calling. You know, that's different from coming down and saying, hey, let's be more aggressive with the play calling.
And I don't actually know why he's taking notes.
What do you think he's taking notes for?
Like, because if we were going down the road of my argument, he can print out the effing game book like I do.
Right.
And then just go, oh, you know when I was mad in the third quarter when they ran it twice? And just go find those plays. Because maybe he wants evidence to say, listen, these are some of the situations I'd like to see you be more aggressive. I'd like to see you throw the ball. I'd like to see you do whatever. And I don't know that that's the worst thing in the world. That's like an executive producer, right? He's not micromanaging the film. He's not editing the film. But every once in a while, he steps in and says, that doesn't feel quite right.
That seems like something a head coach should do. Not a team owner.
When you don't have a head coach with experience or cachet or any of that, sometimes extreme situations call for extreme changes.
You might be right about that. I just think that
you got to support Gerard Mayo somehow. You didn't do it in the first try,
right,
which was the staff around him and all the setup. So now maybe you need to kind of nudge him in the right direction of how to handle things.
What they think is what they think is the right direction.
Yes.
What they believe
but
to
you
be the
think
right
and
direction.
I think too.
Well, right? Sure.
We
in
all
a,
think the
in
same
a
thing.
Broad general sense.
Who doesn't think that? Drake May thinks that.
Drake May definitely thinks it.
So who doesn't?
Well, obviously Alex Van Pelt doesn't.
So,
and maybe he has his reasons for not thinking that. Maybe he doesn't think going down the field is a feasible way to run this offense because the offensive line doesn't hold up blocking long enough. I mean, there's various ways you could look at this that aren't
roll
necessarily.
Them out, cut the field in half. We can find other ways, Alex.
All right.
Don't give me details, Alex.
Okay. But these are details that come into play. He has to go and he has to chart out an offense. And that has to have details attached to it. And you can't just say, hey, be more aggressive. See you later. Thanks for calling. He's taking notes.
So that's
They're taking notes up there.
BMAC and AVP and Gerard can sit down and figure out the specifics of the course that Jonathan wants to nudge them toward.
Sure.
I don't hate it as much as people are going to hate it. He's going to get universally ripped by everybody. He's meddlesome. It's an embarrassment. I mean, McAfee was asking Belichick. Like, this is the talking point. This is the it's one of those classic examples. We can think something, but as soon as we have either photo or video evidence of it, it blows up, right? Mm-hmm. Like the Ray Rice thing. Extreme example.
That's a very extreme example, but yes.
How much that changed when video changed everything. Mm-hmm. And this is that. Everybody had their opinions about Jonathan and Robin and what they were doing and how they were Now we have a notebook, a pen, and a game, and a comment about how terrible the play calling is. It's right there before our eyes. You have to accept it. The question is it understandable and acceptable?
Is the play calling understandable and acceptable?
The input
from the ownership.
Owner.
It's understandable. Acceptable? I don't know. I don't know if it is.
Do you think this would be a step in the wrong direction or the right direction?
I think it would be a step in the wrong direction for ownership to get involved on that level. I want the offense to be more aggressive, sure. I think for the owners to come downstairs and say, hey, we've taken a bunch of notes about the offense, and we think the play calling should be changed in this way, and this way, I think is a bad precedent to set, and I think any other team that had their owner doing that, I would laugh at them.
I agree.
Would say this is cheeseball stuff.
I agree when you say it that way, but the problem is you created this mess. You created this environment with a first-time offensive coordinator.
It's true, they did.
With a first-time head coach, with no structure. With BMAC, who I have to, like, pull teeth to get information about what BMAC does. The most experienced guy on the staff had to pull teeth to find out kind of what's his imprint, what's his input in this all. So Robert and Jonathan created this. What did they expect was going to happen? That was Mayo Midas? Like, he had some golden touch, and he was just going to touch AVP, and he'd be a great offensive coordinator and touch DC. And
that's how it works, right?
Because it's been the opposite. He does not have the Midas touch, because he needs to start by just touching the top of his own head if he's going to use the Midas touch.
You know where the Patriots rank in attendance this year? You want to turn your phone off there?
It's not mine, Jack Wagon. It's yours.
That's not my phone. That is my phone. Excuse me.
Listen to this effing guy.
How about that?
This effing guy.
I didn't even know my phone had the sound. I haven't put the sound on my phone in years. Anyway, apologies.
Wow.
Apologies, Andy. I thought it was yours.
That one bit you in the ass fast.
It certainly did. You don't know what the Patriots' attendance is? I'll tell you. They are 27th in the NFL in attendance.
Ouch, babe.
They are averaging 64,637 fans.
Seems high.
It does seem high, doesn't it? That is 27th. That's ahead of Arizona, Tampa Bay, Washington, Las Vegas, and Chicago is dead last, 32nd, and this is in 2024 attendance. And I think that's why they're up there taking notes. I think that's what this is all about. I think they're very aware of the fact that the Mac Jones wave crashed on the beach and that's it. That's over. That was supposed to be the wave that took him into the next generation of Patriots football, and that one's over. And now here's the Drake May era is about to start, and people aren't coming to see him. And I think that's what this is about.
Could be. I mean, we've always said the way to the craft's attention is finances, ratings, ticket sales.
I believe it's finance.
I struggle with that. I can't say it that. Clearly, I will never be a billionaire because I can't say it the way billionaires say that word. Uh-huh. I say finance,
right,
like a poor schmuck. But that's always the way we thought you get to them, right? Ratings, pro shop sales, jersey sales, attendance, concessions, and all of that. And maybe you're right. Or maybe it's as simple as they are fans,
mm-hmm,
and they're not enjoying the product again. Remember when Robert had high standards?
Yes.
They were supposed to be a compete for a championship every year. That ship has sailed. I think he would give anything for a freaking win in December. A win. A fun game. An entertainment value-worthy game. Right? And I think that might be part of it. The Patriot experience from fans, and believe me,
mm-hmm,
I talk to fans Sunday nights from Attleboro to Australia and everywhere in between.
Yes.
Literally, that are miserable. That are like choosing not to watch games.
It's tough to be a fan of this team.
It is, yeah. And it has been. It's the Drake May thing. Mm-hmm. It's not just the one-off of this year. You won four games last year and you were unwatchable.
Yep.
The bulk of the last 4 or 5 years post-Tom Brady, you've been unwatchable. The Cam Newton era, even though there weren't fans, was kind of unwatchable. It was a lot of crappy football being played. So really you had the 1 year of Mac Jones, the mirage on that horizon, whatever. Other than that, they have not been a fun football team. And I think they're probably feeling that as well as fans. You know what? I do believe they have fun counting their money. I absolutely believe that. Like Scrooge McDuck diving through the coins. But I also think they have fun. Remember the old clip of Jonathan? His fantasy numbers are going to be awesome today.
Yeah.
Like, I think they enjoy football when it's being played at a high entertaining level. And they are the furthest thing right now from a highly entertaining form of football.
By the way, Gillette Stadium holds 65,878 people.
So they're right near attendance.
They're near it. 64. But when they sell out, they're up around 17th, 18th, 16th in the league. So they're never going to be in like the top 10 or anything. It's just not big enough.
Right.
But when they're selling out, that's right. When they're selling out, they're not at the bottom. And last year they were 29th, 63,000 was the average for last season.
That
and this
got
year,
smoked by the finale.
That's true. And this year it's up a little bit. It's up to 64, but it's still well below what they were doing before and what the business model was and sort of what you thought of when you thought of New England Patriots football. And listen, we talked to Fitzy when he's down there at the tailgate. It doesn't sound the same, you know? It just doesn't.
No.
It's not the same kind of crowd. It's not the same kind of fan base. There's not that same kind of excitement. They're not engaged. It's just, it's different, you know? This is how the rest of the world lived for 20 years while we were selling out everything every single weekend.
And now it's come around. But the weird part of it is, and I know we're going to get into this, comparisons, but you do have an elite quarterback, maybe an elite young
quarterback.
Maybe
an elite quarterback,
and
yeah.
Certainly an elite young cornerback. You have marquee tentpole stars.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of feel like you have your Tatum and Brown, and that you're going in a direction building around these two pillars. And even then, there isn't excitement. There isn't fun. It's almost like people get, I won't say annoyed, but are more dismissive of the Drake May flip to Pop because it's like, we're really relegated to celebrating this meaningless touchdown.
Kind of, yeah.
You know what I mean? It almost feels dirty. We used to celebrate real important plays.
We've been doing that with Drake May since preseason.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, that throw to Baker that he almost caught. Oh, what right. A great throw that way. You know, that's what
the one to K.J. Osborne, and then they lined up wrong
yeah.
And it didn't actually
then
count.
It gets called back, but yeah, it was a great play. That's what we've been reduced to. That's what it's like right now. That's the experience of the New England Patriots fan, and it's tough to make a lot of money that way.
And this is a great text. I think there were a lot of people that believed this on Sunday. 207, I'll be honest, I was pissed when I had to watch the poop show rather than watch the Lions and Bills.
It's true, yeah.
People wanted to watch another game,
mm-hmm.
a neutral team game, because they knew it was much more exciting and had star power and was fun and was football at its highest level in 2024.
Yeah, and now you got the crafts up in the booth taking notes about the play calling. So here we are. 617-779-7937 is your phone number. It is a Ross Tucker Tuesday. If you watched that game, and if you did, T's and P's, then you heard Ross Tucker was part of the broadcast. He's also going to be part of the broadcast of this next game against the Bills that got flexed to 425 again for some reason. I know you're happy
yes!
about that. I don't really get why they did that. It's the Patriots. They're probably going to get smoked by 70 points. But anyway, Tucker's going to be on to talk about that and everything Patriots related right after Dan Ball gets you caught up on.
It's James Kell from the Sleeper King Football Podcast. In fantasy football, sleepers can win you championships, and that's why I am here. Every episode is just 15 to 20 minutes long, every Tuesday through Friday. Subscribe to the Sleeper King Podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your pods.
What's trending? It's WEEI Afternoons, Arcan Hart, and joining us right now on the phone, Odyssey NFL insider, as well as color commentator extraordinaire, for the Patriots and the Cardinals in Arizona. He's also going to be on this Patriots and Buffalo Bills game in Buffalo. I'm talking, of course, about the great Ross Tucker, who joins us right now here on WEEI Afternoons, and he's brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise Mayo. Game day, be delicious. Ross Tucker, how are we doing, sir?
I am awesome, but we're starting with some factual inaccuracies.
Again.
So
what happened?
I will clear things up. I will not be on the call for Patriots-Bills. I am doing Titans-Colts, but the NFL did just announce that I will be in town Saturday the 28th for Chargers-Patriots, Saturday 1 o'clock on NFL Network. That'll be my first time doing a game for NFL Network. So I will be doing another Patriots game. It won't be this weekend. It'll be the following weekend, and I'm looking forward to it. I'll tell you why. I am absolutely shocked, because after the game, I got at least 5 tweets from Patriots fans saying, we stink, we're god-awful, but at least you made the game entertaining. We're horrible, but at least you were the broadcaster. I got to tell you guys, that never happened. So as a broadcaster, right? Usually after the game, it's more negative than positive. And then if you ever look to see where the people are that are negative, it's always the people whose team lost, right?
Like, interesting.
They're always mad that their team lost. They're mad that you didn't agree with the one call that they thought was a bad call. Like, it's all personal, usually. So for me to get, like, 5 to 7 posts from, you know, random Patriots fans, I don't even know who they are, say, you made that game enjoyable, you made that game tolerable, like, that's like the greatest compliment I could ever get.
Certainly wasn't from the family of Vedarian Lowe, the left tackle. Probably not. You kind of bullied him on national TV.
Okay, so let's talk about that. First of all, by all accounts, he sounds like he's a great kid.
Very nice, yeah.
And he's trying his best.
Yep.
I have no idea why on back-to-back plays he didn't get out of his stance. I don't know if there was noise. I don't think there was noise because I think about a quarter of the stands were Patriots fans. Let me ask you guys this. I was curious about this. How many of the Patriots fans that were there do you think live in Arizona versus, let's say, live in New England and chose to travel to go out to Arizona because, hey, it's nice in Arizona, it'll be warm, we'll go golf for a couple of days, and then we'll see the Pats play?
I would say like 75-25 live there. That would be my guess. I don't think people are traveling to watch this team.
I might go a little less, but yeah. I know it is popular. Miami and Arizona in recent years, they do that, or Vegas, there's been a few. Because most Patriots fans, there's a lot of them that do one trip a year.
Right.
And that is one they may have circled.
I think that's fair. I think I would say 25% of the fans in the stadium were probably Patriots fans. I do think a lot of them, it seemed like, live out there, just looking at them like going to their cars after the game. And I think what happened is one guy told me that he's a huge Patriots fan since 85 because when they, you know, the Phoenix didn't have a team. I don't know when the St. Louis Cardinals moved to Phoenix, but when he was growing up out there, there was no team. And the first game he was really into was Bears-Patriots.
Ouch.
85 Super Bowl, and he picked the Patriots, and, like, that's why that's his squad. So I thought that was actually kind of cool. As for Vedarian Lowe, listen, I mean, I thought he was okay after that. It's just they have a really bad roster. I mean, there's no way around it. And the thing is, like, I would say by far the most disturbing thing to me about the Patriots, if I'm a Patriots fan, is that if you went move by move this offseason, the batting average is low.
Very.
I mean, you know, so Drake May was a home run. I love the kid. Talking with him on Saturday, I love him. During the game, I love him even more. Like, you have by far the most important piece. But then the second round pick, the receiver, has done nothing. The third round pick from Penn State, the tackle, I don't know, maybe he will be a good player if he gets a chance to play a couple more games, but he's kind of an unknown. The fourth round pick, receiver, hasn't done anything. I mean, the draft class has been bad by any standard. But the big thing to me was football, right? The most important evaluation is evaluating your own players. Self-evaluation, right? And I don't know. I mean, look, you guys know better than me, but they extended Duggar.
Mm-hmm.
He has not played well.
No.
Okay? They extended Godchaw. He really hasn't done much of anything.
Nope.
They extended Barmore, and, you know, he's probably a different category because of the blood clot. So.
Right.
We'll give him a pass on that one.
But he looks like a shell of himself now since he's come back, too. I mean, he hasn't come back at 100%.
Yeah,
it doesn't look like.
But
yeah.
I'm going to give him a little bit of a pass. I've never come back from a blood clot, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'll give him a pass. Uche, you know, they paid, didn't really do anything. They traded him for peanuts. Offensively, it's, like, so disturbing. They gave a lot of money to Owenu, and he has not played well. He has not played as well as they need him to play. Oh, I forgot, on the fourth-round pick, at guard, Robinson, boy, is he struggling.
Mm.
I mean, he's really struggling, the fourth-round pick. I think Stevenson is a fine player, but I don't know. I like Ramondre. I always have. But when you think about the money they gave him, you know, he's making a lot more money than Antonio Gibson is. And I don't know that Ramondre is a better player than Antonio Gibson or gives them more juice. I think the Hunter Henry signing was a good one. Hunter's still playing at a high level. I think the Austin Hooper signing was a good one. But then, you know, the Okorafor, who was supposed to be their left tackle and then retired or whatever. I mean, I'm not trying to kill whoever it is, Elliott Wolf, whatever. I'm just saying, objectively, if you look at the batting average, it's bad. It's a low batting average. And it's, in particular, not nearly high enough with the guys that were already on the team. You know, the guys that they obviously identified, hey, these are our core guys. You know, Peppers, they gave him an extension, right? Mm-hmm. Now, maybe part of that is the off-the-field thing, you know, and maybe he was worth the money. I don't know. It's just kind of a bad look.
Yeah.
It certainly is a really bad look.
We're talking with Odyssey NFL insider Ross Tucker. He's brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. Ross, you saw it. Everybody saw it. The crafts up in the owner's booth taking notes, talking about the play calling, generally looking pretty unenthused by what they were seeing. What do you make of that, and how serious do you think that's going to get in terms of job security for coaches, assistants, coordinators, that type of thing?
Yeah, no, they showed it, and I saw it, and I saw what some of you guys were saying on social media after the game about it. I would be surprised if they just brought everyone back the way it's currently constituted. The one thing I can tell you, because my first 3 years in the NFL, my head coach got fired, so I'm like the original coach killer, you know? The one thing I can tell you is that how you finish matters a lot, like a lot. So I know everybody's thinking, 3-11, you know, see, it doesn't matter anymore. Nope, that is the wrong way to look at it. You know, these next three games make a big difference. Think about how different you'd feel about the Patriots if they had won that game against the Colts and then put forth a better showing against the Cardinals. So I'm not saying they got to win, you know, against the Bills or the Chargers or whatever, but they certainly need to play better than they have, because people usually remember the most the thing that they see the last. So these next three games matter a lot to everybody, right? Like, if I'm a player, I am fully well aware that they are looking right now to decide who's going to be back and who's not, and that there's going to be a lot of changes, right? So I've been in that situation. I am playing my you-know-what off and preparing my you-know-what off so that I stay when they make these changes. Or if I'm part of the changes, I get picked up somewhere else. I hope these guys recognize that, because that is absolutely the situation they're in. And I would say that's everybody. You know, it's interesting because they had over 400 yards of offense and 200 yards rushing against the Colts a couple weeks ago. I just watched the Colts tape against the Broncos, because I'm doing Broncos Chargers Thursday night radio and then Colts Titans Sunday. And the Broncos didn't even have 200 yards of offense against the Colts. So for the Patriots to put up 400 yards of offense, that was highly encouraging. Whereas I thought Sunday was a big step back after the bye and very discouraging. So these next three games, I think these performances matter a great deal for everyone involved. I think everyone is being evaluated. I wouldn't put anything off the table. I mean, if the Krafts are who I think they are, which is, I think Mr. Krafts has been as good of an owner as there is in pro sports, I think he's, you know, that list I went over with you guys of, like, the moves they made this offseason, the guys they've re-signed, I think he's got to strongly consider who he wants to be making those moves moving forward. And then where does that put Jerod Mayo? I mean, they probably have the worst roster in the NFL.
Yep.
So their record is about what I guess I would have thought it would be. I guess the thing that surprised me was when they beat the Bengals early, or even when they beat the Jets. It's almost like them winning those couple games early made people forget that they're not good at all. I mean, they have a bad roster that's been compounded by some of these injuries and some of these issues that have happened.
Ross, we stream our show on Twitch, and some of the Twitch chatters are big fans of yours, and they had a question they wanted me to ask, and that is this. What was up with the short tie?
Yeah, what was with the tie? What was going on?
What happened?
Yeah, I'm disappointed in that. So you know what's funny? I do that on purpose because you're usually, you know, usually when you're on camera, you have your sport coat on, mm-hmm. right? I have the CBS blazer on. And so I think it's a terrible look when the tie comes out the bottom of the blazer. You know what I mean? Like you're standing there and you got the blazer, even if you have it buttoned, when the tie comes out at the bottom of it, I always think that's a bad look. So I shorten my tie up a little bit for the on camera at the start of the game with the blazer on because I don't want it sticking out of the tie. Like I'm conscious of that. Well, they had the roof open and it was like hot there. Like it was too hot to wear my blazer the whole game. So I took it off and then we all had it off. And then the one time they say, hey, we're going on camera here. And I forgot I was rocking the shorty tie. And then the second time I didn't even know we were coming on camera and I still had the shorty tie. So that's the answer. The answer is it's actually intentional because 9 times out of 10 when I'm on television, I have the blazer on and I don't want the tie sticking out the bottom. I think that's a really bad look. So I intentionally shortened it and it backfired. And yes, I mean, people I've never met before emailed me to tell me it's a social faux pas and that the tip of the tie needs to go down to the belt. You know what I think? I think everybody needs to get a life, okay?
I think you should lean into it, Ross. I think you should do a short tie every week, just like
Whitworth
with the blazer and the hoodie. I think that should be your look now.
Every week it should get smaller.
Well, that's a good point. Yeah, make it shorter every week.
Yeah, here's the other thing you guys need to know. I'm almost 6'5".
Right.
And my pants are a 32-inch inseam. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Which means I've got crazy short legs. Like, when I was in Washington,
that's
Chris Daniels called me Torso Man.
Yeah, you're a freak,
okay?
Torso Man. I'm short, and that's weird.
I have freakishly long torso. Like, if I sit down at a movie, the people behind me hate me, right? Like, I'm all torso.
But your legs dangle.
Even if I have a normal-sized tie, and even if I try to make it long, it still is short on me because my torso is so crazy long. So I'm basically like a real messed up Mr. Potato Head. I have short arms. You got to Google this. I'm not kidding. I didn't even realize when I was playing, I didn't know it was this big of a deal, right? My arm length. I went to Penn State recently and they like took me through their recruit thing.
Mm-hmm.
My arms are 30.75 inches. Okay. If you look at the combine the last 5 years, only one offensive lineman, Linderbaum from the Ravens, the 6'1 center,
yep,
he's the only one who's less than 32 inches, and he's 31.75. So I don't ever
like
want to hear
T-Rex.
Anyone. Oh, I am.
You're like a T-Rex.
And they wouldn't even give me a chance to play now. I wouldn't even get a shot. And I'm almost 6'5". So now I don't ever want to say, hear anybody say, oh, he's a journeyman lineman, or oh, he wasn't that great, or he only started 25 games, he only played 2 games for the Patriots. As far as I'm concerned, okay, I am in the Hall of freaking fame for under 31-inch offensive lineman arm length.
Maybe the greatest of all time.
I'm one of the five greatest offensive linemen with under 31-inch arms who's ever lived. I want some respect for my short-armed accomplishments.
I think they should put a new wing in the Hall of Fame in Ohio. I think they should make that for the short-armed kings like you, Ross Tucker. Thanks so much for the time today. We appreciate it. We look forward to hearing your call of not Patriots-Bills, but Patriots-Chargers in 2 weeks. Thanks, Ross.
Yes, I'm coming to Foxborough. You got to give me some restaurant recommendations and the whole deal. I'm doing it up Thursday night, Friday night for that game.
Let's go. Yeah, yeah. We'll make that happen. Roz Tucker, thanks so much for joining us here. That was Odyssey NFL Insider Roz Tucker. Insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. You can purchase Hellman's at your local Walmart, Kroger, or grocery store and add a little extra deliciousness and creamy flavor to your game day dishes this football season. A lot of stuff there from Tucker, which we will digest and get into. In the meantime, when we return, the Red Sox made a great trade. Are they going to do anything else?
Well,
we'll discuss that as we have some ESPN predictions to go through as well. That's all coming up next.
Yeah, I'm disappointed in that.
That was Craig Breslow on MLB Network Radio. That was from earlier today. If you zoned out in the middle of that, I don't blame you. It is Craig Breslow after all. However, he is talking about pitching, starting pitching, and how that's something they're continuing to look at. Kind of poo-pooed the idea of really upgrading much in terms of position players, which I was surprised by. I didn't expect to hear him say that.
I didn't expect to hear him say anything.
Yeah, anything about...
He talked too much about selling me on all the good things with the returning roster.
Right.
That felt like a, oh, well, we're not going to get Teoscar Hernandez or Bregman or whoever, so I'm going to start selling people on how good everything that we already have is.
And there's some good players on the roster who are returning, but you know who's not returning? Your best right-handed hitter.
Mm-hmm.
All right? He's gone. He's a Baltimore Oriole right now, and you need to replace him. That's
31
not really,
bombs.
That's not really negotiable. Like, you have to do something about that. You do have a good returning lineup, but it's all lefties, and the righties are questioned. Trevor Story and those guys, we don't know. We don't know what they're going to be or how they're going to look or what's going to happen. So, yeah, you need to replace Tyler O'Neill, and you need to do it yesterday. And ESPN has their free agent predictions, which are out right now. They did nail the Juan Soto to the Mets thing, which, again, I mean, listen, a lot of people thought that. But here's what they're saying about the remaining free agents who have not signed yet. Number one, or I guess number five, but he's number one on this list, is Alex Bregman. The projected contract, 6 years, $187 million.
Mm.
That's 30 and change, I guess, right? Best bets to sign Bregman are the Yankees, the Mets, the Tigers, the Phillies, the Astros, the Nationals, and the Boston Red Sox.
How many best bets do you get?
A lot of best bets.
That really narrows it down.
Jesus.
A whole lot of best bets.
That's a quarter of the freaking league.
Here is what they say about the Red Sox. The Red Sox don't need a third baseman. Great. Well, then next. With Bregman, though, they would have to move Rafael Devers to first base or DH if they don't trade Tristan Casas. They undoubtedly find this stat hard to ignore. Among players with at least 95 regular season plate appearances at Fenway, Bregman has the highest OPS. How about that? Higher than Ted Williams, Lou Gehrig, and David Ortiz. He has hit .375, .490, .750 in 21 games at Fenway.
Did you read that sentence right? It's higher than those guys?
Higher than those guys.
Oh, I thought those were the only guys that were higher.
No. It's the high. He has the highest of all time. In 95 regular season plate appearances, he has the highest OPS ever at Fenway Park.
95.
It's a small sample size, but
Kike Hernandez during like a 95 at-bat span was the best hitter in the history of the world.
It's true. Bregman's dead pull approach, perfectly suited for the Green Monster. You love hearing that, right?
Oh, no,
he's
I don't
got a great
actually.
Swing for Fenway.
I don't
oh,
want
the Green
Bregman.
Monster.
I'm off Bregman.
Well, their prediction is that he goes to the Red Sox.
Oh, come on now.
That's what they're predicting.
I don't really want him.
You don't want him at all?
No. Because I feel like it's going to hinder future things that I want.
Like?
I don't know yet, but I think that contract being on the books for the next 6 years at $30 million a year is going to become a reason they can't do X, Y, and Z.
I am happy to move Devers over to first base and or DH. I'm happy to have a third baseman who can hit at Fenway or wherever. I mean, he's not on the upswing of his career, but he's still a pretty good right-handed hitter in the league, and he does have a good swing for Fenway or whatever, even though I hate that.
He's pretty good on the downswing, and you're giving him 6 years at $30 million a year.
Yeah.
I don't like that
I don't
that
love
math.
That. I don't love it. But you do have to replace that right-handed bat.
Teoscar.
Well, Teoscar, not on the best bets. For Pete Alonso, Christian Walker, Anthony Santander, and Teoscar Hernandez, and also Sasaki, the pitcher, Red Sox were not listed as best bets for any of them.
Boo.
Corbin Burns, right-handed pitcher, projected contract, 7 years, $225 million. Best bets, the Giants, the Blue Jays, the Mets, the Orioles,
Red Sox,
and the Red Sox.
Yeah!
They write, the Red Sox are the fascinating team here. Even after trading for Garrett Crochet, their payroll sits at $150 million, according to Roster Resource, with a luxury tax payroll of about $183 million, still well below the $241 million first-level threshold. They could sign Bregman and Burns at $30 million per season and still be right around the threshold, although they still need a closer as well. Bregman, Burns, and a closer, maybe that's a stretch, but keep in mind the Red Sox made a big offer to Soto, and they might be willing to ramp up that payroll well past the tax threshold after sitting well under it in recent seasons.
Who wrote that, me?
Yeah, right.
That sounds like a little gullible Andy.
It certainly does.
Yeah, we're getting another starting pitcher, and then we're going to get a closer.
However,
like, they've done nothing.
Their prediction is that he goes to the Giants, to the San Francisco Giants. Very sad.
He is a West Coast guy. That does make sense.
People have said that. I've read that he wants to go out and play on the West Coast. Red Sox were also listed as possibilities for Sean Manaea and Jack Flaherty. Either one of those to set your toes a-tapping there, Andy Hart?
Not really.
No?
I want Burns and Hernandez.
I'd like those guys. That's the top of my wish list.
And Mason Miller if we're doing the trifecta.
If it's Burns and Bregman, I'll take that, though. I'll take Burns and Bregman.
I think Bregman is going to be an albatross. I think it's going to be something that is net negative over the totality of that contract.
Six
to this
years,
team.
If the first three of them are decent.
What is decent?
I'm okay with that.
Like the if 5 years ago decent when he could hit you 30, 40 home runs or the more recent
if he
recent
gives
decent?
You between 20 and 25 home runs for those 3 years.
So he's worse than Tyler O'Neill.
Yeah, I expect to
only played 113 games and hit 31 home runs.
Right. I mean, I don't think he's going to be better than Tyler O'Neill or the same as Tyler O'Neill. I think it'll be worse than him, but it'll
and
still
be. And we're spending $180 million on him?
Yeah, but that's not going to mean much in the last 3 years of the contract. In the last 3 years of the contract, that's just going to be a run-of-the-mill, you know, sort of whatever contract.
To this team? Guy,
to any team. That's
they
just the way the market's
going to be. $20 million's a lot. They've been selling me on $20 million deals.
And have you not seen the direction that these contracts are going in right now? It's not necessarily.
Elsewhere,
they're going very high.
Elsewhere. They don't look at baseball finance the same way that the rest of baseball looks at finance. They still think $20 million is a big deal like it's 2004.
It's true.
They look at it differently. So I worry that while you're right, I think contracts are exploding. I think that Tucker trade was a part of that because people see, oh my God, Soto got what? The contracts are going through the roof. I think the Red Sox will look at a $30 million deal as a massive contract.
Probably.
For a long period of time.
Barton. It's one banana, Michael. What could it possibly cost? $7? That is an Arrested Development reference. You probably didn't get
it. Yeah, I didn't get it.
And a good one.
Thank you. 617-779-7937. You're the dork. 7937 is the phone number. When we return, the NBA Cup final is tonight. The Milwaukee Bucks. The Oklahoma City Thunder. Weird how NBA ratings are down. We'll get to that next.